Thank you for coming out today to celebrate the graduation of a prospect from the ranks of the prospect list. Alex J. Jackson. First round pick in the 2014 draft by the Seattle Mariners and traded to Atlanta in 2016. .233 minor league batting average with 76 home runs and 280 RBI. Two-time Atlanta Organizational All-Star in 2017 and 2019 and a Florida State League All-Star in 2017. Jackson leaves the OFR top prospect list as the number 15 prospect. Please give a round of applause for Alex Jackson.
Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
Hey everybody, I am Andy Harris, and with me is my co-host Matt Kritzberg. Hey Matt, why are we doing this podcast?
Well, we write about it every week in our OFR Farm Report that comes out every weekend, and we talk about what's going on at the different levels, the performances of the teams for the week. But it's not really a format which we can really deep dive into individual players and expound upon some of the things we've seen over the course of the week. Hence, this podcast. So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to talk about what we've seen, what we think is going to go on, and what may happen in the future.
Yeah, so make sure you check out our writing on OutfieldFlyRule.com. That's what the OFR and OFR Farm Report podcast stands for. And every Sunday-ish, we try to put out our written Sunday Farm Report. And it kind of does a summary of how the teams were doing that week. We don't really want to do that on the podcast. We want to focus more on the players themselves. And in fact, this week we're going to go through the affiliates. We haven't had a podcast since the minor league season started, so we wanted to talk a little bit about the rosters, where the top players were, and who we were surprised to see at certain levels, either high or low, and also who's gotten off to strong starts. We just had the graduation ceremony for Alex Jackson. Unfortunately, he's on the injured list as he graduates, so that was a shocking occurrence as both catchers go down on the same day.
And seeing as Alex's hamstring is hurt and could not make it up on the stage, we accept this diploma on his behalf.
Yes. And Matt, with every setback, there's an opportunity for somebody, and the opportunity this time is for William Contreras, who was our number four prospect on our last prospect list. I guess he would be number three now since Ian Anderson graduated. But so what are you expecting from Mr. Contreras going forward? Since he seems like, unless they make a trade, he's probably going to be the primary catcher going forward.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. And he's doing more than holding his own at the moment. He's going to provide more offense, at least, than any of the other potential candidates, whether it be Jeff Mathis or Alex Jackson. I'm not going to speak about Travis d'Arnaud right now because he's so far back from coming back, we don't know when that's going to be. It could be months. It could be not at all this season. We'll just have to wait and see on that one. But he's holding his own. Now, there's going to be some growing pains, whether it's on the offensive side. I mean, we've already seen a couple of defensive lapses here and there. But, I mean, he's a rookie catcher. There's going to be growing pains, but it's his job. I mean, there's nobody's going to come take it from the other two possible candidates. Like I was talking about, Mathis and Jackson combined can't do anything with the bat. And once you get past that, for one thing, we heard about Tyler Flowers officially retiring today due to back issues. I mean, he just simply physically can't catch anymore. But if something happens, I mean, if William Contreras gets hurt, fingers crossed, the depth chart after that is pretty bad. I mean, you're talking about possibly getting dipping all the way down to like Jonathan Morales down at Triple A, or I can't imagine they would even consider Ryan Castile, but that chart gets a little ugly after that. But I imagine they're going to scoop somebody up over the next couple weeks, if not through a trade. And somebody, you say like Jonathan Lucroy or somebody like that, who can at least function as a major league catcher.
Right. And we've seen the Braves in recent years bring in kind of these veteran catchers that always seem to be eminently available, like, you know, remember Chris Stewart, remember Rene Rivera.
John Ryan Murphy,
exactly. You know, Jeff Mathis was basically one of those guys, right? Now Mathis is interesting because he's probably been the best defensive catcher in Major League Baseball the last 10 years. And it's really not even been close. He's just been that good. And unfortunately, he cannot hit a lick. And I assume the idea was that they were going to pair Contreras with Mathis at AAA, you know, let Contreras absorb that wisdom. And just now that just happens at the major league level.
Yeah, and in the case of Mathis, I mean, I know he's one-dimensional, but that's a lot better dimension than a lot of these 4A type catchers that would be out on the market have. So, I mean, I think Jeff Mathis came in thinking, hey, I'm going to kind of work my way into coaching, but all of a sudden he's being thrown in at the major league level and probably pretty regularly. He was probably thinking Tyler Fowler's going to be coming to take his job and he'd be heading down to kind of be a player coach at Gwinnett, but I think that's on the back burner for a while at least.
But absolutely, I think you're right. They're going to have to bring somebody else in for depth purposes. If it's not a free agent, then a minor trade or something like that. But regardless, I think it's William Contreras from here on out. It's it's hopefully the start of a very productive run here for Atlanta with a homegrown catcher, which we haven't really had in a while. Christian Betancourt, of course, was going at one point going to be that homegrown catcher of the future that follows in the steps of Javi Lopez and Brian McCann, but that didn't pan out. So I hate to bring that specter up. I think we both feel very strongly about William Contreras and his chances. We both like him a lot, and I know I've been banging the drum on him for quite a few years now since he was in Danville. So it's very exciting, but he's gonna take his lumps too. I think most young guys when they come up, their trajectory looks more like Austin Riley's than say Ronald Acuna's, right?
Yeah, and I think he was gonna get some regular playing time this year anyway. I was thinking maybe he'd spend about half the season at Gwinnett and then come up around, the All-Star break or something like that to start caddying for Travis d'Arnaud, because if Travis d'Arnaud leaves through free agency at the end of the season, William Contreras is your starting catcher next year, and you don't want to just drop him in cold, kind of like you're having to do this season, but it kind of gives him a lot of time to kind of prep himself, get ready, and he could be the starting catcher even as early as next season, regardless of what would have happened with d'Arnaud.
Yep. And I also want to touch briefly on Christian Pache. He was placed on the injured list last night. He pulled up with a sore hamstring running through first base. Even before that, it looked like maybe his days were numbered in Atlanta, at least this go-round. He was not hitting particularly well. I think that goes... I'm probably short-selling it. He was not hitting basically at all. He had hit a very... beautiful grand slam when he first came up, and then and had another hit that game, and I think has only had one hit since then. It seemed for certain that he was ticketed back for AAA. Instead, he goes on the injured list. I still am a huge believer in Christian Pache, but I found myself in the unusual situation on social media this week arguing that sending him back to AAA is probably the best situation for both him and the team. Ender Inciarte's in there now. Guillermo Heredia, I think, started a rehab assignment with Gwinnett today. When do you think we'll see Pache back again, barring, of course, another series of catastrophic injuries for the center field position?
I think it's going to be a while this time. I don't think this is like a two-week thing down at Gwinnett. I think they're going to hand it over to Ender, and then once Guillermo Heredia is back, which according to David O'Brien on his podcast yesterday said that he could be back as early as early next week. So when that happens, they'll kind of split up center field, and imagine Heredia will probably get more of the playing time at that point, and Ender will be a backup in center field, and they'll get Camargo back to Gwinnett. And I think Pache, they're going to leave him there for a while, because I mean, he only got about a month there in at the end of 2019. He hasn't had any significant AAA experience, and I think they're going to put him together with the coaches down there, get his mechanics completely straight down. I mean, he's just a total mess right now. I mean, he's striking out 40% of the times. You can't put enough defense. I know he's going to be an all-world center fielder, but he can't put together enough defense to make up for that offense. I mean, he's a long way from being what he needs to be, but it's not – I mean, it's very fixable. It's just a matter of getting the mechanics straight. I mean, we've seen the progress over the last couple of years. I mean, he improved his power, his every facet of his offense he was improving on. So I don't see any reason why he can't do that again. But, yeah, he's just overmatched at the major league level right now, but I don't think it's a permanent thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I still think he's going to be a star someday. It's just today's not that day. Literally everybody was like, well, he's probably going to struggle at first, but he's going to give you great defense and then he'll learn on the job. But we had struggle. When I was thinking struggle, I was thinking hitting in the low 200s, give you a pop one out every once in a while, but it wasn't the hitting around 100 struggle, which is just that's a whole different level. That's major league pitcher level. And it doesn't matter who else is in your lineup. You really can't have that big of a hole in your National League lineup, unfortunately.
No, and I think the rock bottom came during the game when he got injured, when the bottom three in the lineup were Jeff Mathis, Christian Pache, and the pitching spot. That's literally three automatic outs in your lineup. I mean, it's tough to win any kind of major league ball games when you've got that kind of black hole in your lineup.
Okay. And before we start talking about the affiliates, I just have one question for you, Matt. So looking out at in the future here, who would you guess is the next rookie to come up?
I think it's going to be Jaceel De La Cruz. I mean, Jaceel De La Cruz has been up, but he hasn't actually played in a ball game. So I think he's going to be the next guy up. In fact, he pitched for Gwinnett tonight, but he only went three innings. So I don't know. I still don't know what the plan is really for him. I don't know if they're trying to stretch him back out starting status. I mean, it just seems kind of odd what the role is right now. But I think he's going to be up in relief sometime in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, you read my mind there. I agree. I think Jaceel De La Cruz is the next man up. And with the amount of trouble that that the bullpen has been having with particularly in getting right-handed hitters out, I think they're going to be looking for answers. Shane Green obviously was signed. He's going to be part of that solution. But even so, you still have the likes of Jesse Biddle sitting out in your bullpen. You still have some other not great options. You know, Jacob Webb has been hit or miss. You got Josh Tomlin really hasn't given you much of anything. He's hardly pitched, and when he has, he's been extremely hittable. So so I agree. Jaceel De La Cruz, I think, may be the next guy that gets an opportunity in Atlanta.
And I think what's going to end up prompting it is Chris Martin. I know he recently returned. He's been quite effective when he is pitching, but he seems to be getting hurt on a regular basis now, and I'm not going to put any money that he's not going to get hurt again at some point this season. And I think at that point, Shane Green moves up to a more primary role on the right side of the bullpen, and that Jaceel De La Cruz comes up at that point.
All right. Well, with that, you want to talk about something more fun?
Let's do that.
Let's talk about the Gwinnett Stripers. Well, as we predicted, the Stripers are kind of kicking butt and taking names. You would expect it with an experienced, veteran-laden squad. You have Orlando Arcia at shortstop, who is literally a major league caliber shortstop, playing for AAA. He's currently leading the league formerly known as the International League with 5 home runs and is hitting well over 300. So Gwinnett's doing really well. The only real prospect in the lineup every day is Drew Waters. And last time we recorded, Matt, we talked about Drew possibly starting at AA Mississippi. In fact, I think we were kind of leaning that that was going to happen. Instead, he's starting out at Gwinnett and off to a little bit of a shaky start.
Yeah, he's not doing great at this point. I mean, coming into Friday's action, he had an OPS around 550. He's striking about 40% of the time. But, I mean, he's playing some stellar defense out in center field. He saw him make a couple of diving catches. And, of course, and I saw you put it out on Twitter last night about how he there was a ground ball, I think, the shortstop that the fielder threw it to first base, and Waters took off for third at that point. And that's the kind of stuff you're going to get from Drew Waters. I mean, he made the run and was safe at third and was had a lot of energy about it. Let's put it that way. But that's the kind of stuff you're going to get out of him. I mean, he's just going to have some growing pains, but I mean, he's got to be able to make more contact. Although he has a high BABIP, and it's a legitimate BABIP for the most part, because I mean, he hits the ball hard. He sprays it to all fields. But if you're not making contact 35-40% of the time, it's not doing you a whole lot of good.
Yeah, and of course it's still early. And he also had missed a few games. I think he had a little bit of an injury, but he's back now. So we'll see how he improves. If he improves over the course of the next few weeks and months, I fully expect Waters to spend all of 2021 in Gwinnett, and I would be surprised if he got called up. If he did, it would probably be at the very end of the year, or something catastrophe in the center field position.
Yeah, you're running out of center fielders, but they've still got a couple more candidates ahead of them down there. But it's going to take some work to get him where he needs to go. But I mean, that's what he's down there to develop, and he's going to have some ups and downs over the course of the season, but if nothing else, he's going to be fun to watch.
And while Waters may be the only position player prospect at Gwinnett, there's a couple in the rotation, specifically Kyle Moeller and Tucker Davidson, two really hard-throwing lefties. Let's talk about them real quick. One's gotten off to a really strong start. One has not. And let's talk about the positive one first. Tucker Davidson looks fantastic.
He does. I think he's really starting to work himself into the mix to get called up to the major leagues here in the not too distant future. But the news about Mike Soroka having to have a possible exploratory surgery on his Achilles, he's not going to be back anytime soon, if at all, this season. So, I mean, you're going to have to be using that depth chart down at Gwinnett. Bryce Wilson's still going to be your number one option down there for spot starts and if there's any other injuries or ineffectiveness. But generally, Kyle Wright's been second in line behind him, but I'm wondering a couple more strong starts if Tucker Davidson doesn't kind of push his way in line ahead of him.
Yeah, and what fans need to realize, sometimes who gets chosen isn't necessarily who's doing the best or not. It's just whose turn is it that day. If there's an emergency call up, for example, Drew Smiley just, you know, suddenly can't go for some reason and they weren't anticipating that, they look at Gwinnett and go, all right, so who was starting for Gwinnett today? And that's who they're going to call up.
Yep, especially the guys who are already on the 40-man roster and have options available, and there are several of them right now.
Yep. And one of those is Kyle Moeller, who is on the 40-man roster, off to a little bit of a shaky start here. I mean, it's not been terrible or anything like that, and he's certainly not off the rails or anything like that. But his first exposure to AAA, you kind of expect him to struggle a little bit, and he has.
Yeah, he got zero time in. I mean, this is his first experience at AAA. So, I mean, yeah, like I said, it's going to be pretty ugly for a while. I mean, he's only pitched 7 innings between his 2 starts, but he's got a whip of almost 3. He's only got 3 home runs. I mean, that's the Kyle Moeller experience. He's either going to be very brilliant, or you'll know within an inning whether he's going to have a decent start or not. I mean, it's going to be couple of extremes there, but I mean, he's got room to grow. I mean, they're not expecting anything out of him at the major league level this season. I mean, you just gotta just keep getting him reps down at Gwinnett and go from there.
Yep. I think for him, it's all about command. The stuff is there. He throws very hard. His secondaries are improving. It's just being able to command it in the zone, out of the zone, throw it where you need to. And right now, he's just getting way too much of the plate. I think he's very concerned about maybe walking guys. And as a result, he's leaving the pitches in the zone a little too much.
Yeah, and a little bit of that, too, is what baseball are they using? There's been... It wasn't really speculation, I believe. It was Baseball America reported that they're going to be using up the supply of Happy Fun Balls they've been using from 2019 until they're gone, and then they're switched to a different baseball similar to what Major League Baseball is using. So I think based off of the offense we've seen so far in Gwinnett and throughout the league, the AAA East, I think there's still got a lot of those balls floating around there, and we'll just have to see what the effects are going to be going forward and that the transition is once they do run out. But that right there is probably making Tucker Davidson's numbers look even more impressive than they already are.
Let's go ahead and move on to your neck of the woods. So Mississippi, they've gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. I think probably the biggest surprise is they haven't really hit their stride yet offensively as a unit, although there are some guys that are doing well. One of those is the catcher, Shea Langeliers. We had come to understand that he was looking extremely well in minor league spring training. In fact, that's why he was my number one pick in the draft last time we recorded. But he hit his third home run of the season already tonight. We're recording this on Friday night. So that was actually just a little while ago. So it's a little bit of a challenge assignment for him. He got no high A experience at all. Were you surprised that Langeliers was pushed to double A this quickly?
No, not really. Because he was very accomplished in college and got that little bit of low A experience when he first, right after he was drafted, and with time at the alternate site last season, I think he was ready for the double A challenge. I mean, it wasn't a major surprise by any means, and I think he can handle it. Defensively, he could play in major league right now. It's just a matter of probably developing his the one knee catching style, calling games, things like that he's just having to get acclimated to, as well as trying to see what kind of offense he's going to provide. And I mean, he hasn't done a whole lot with the bat. I mean, coming in tonight, he only had 5 hits and 3 of them were extra base hits, including the 2 home runs. But I've seen all 3 home runs he hit, and none of them were cheap home runs. There's no wall scrapers in that batch. I mean, he's hitting legitimate home runs in Mississippi and in Biloxi, which are not easy ballparks to hit home runs in. So I mean, there's some legitimate power there.
So, who was a surprise for you to get the bump to Mississippi?
Victor Vodnik was a definite surprise there. He skips high A altogether, came from low A Rome, but he did get time at the alternate site last season, and they wanted to give him the challenge, and he's been in the starting rotation. Now, how long they leave him in the rotation, I don't know, but he only got a couple innings in his first start, and then he got a second start tonight where he was absolutely dominant for 3 innings, and then just kind of he ran out of gas in the 4th inning and allowed a number of, I believe, 2 hits and 2 walks and allowed several runs in. But for that first 3 innings, he was absolutely dominant. So I think probably about 60 pitches is his limit at the moment. But, I mean, we'll see if they continue to try to build him up. But, I mean, if he continues at this pace, we could see him in Atlanta as a reliever pretty quickly.
Yeah, I hope they keep trying to build him up. His stuff is so good. If he can be even a 5-inning starter with the caliber of his stuff, and I watched a little bit of it tonight, and for those first 3 innings, I mean, Biloxi could do absolutely nothing with him. Commanding that fastball, he's so far beyond his experience level and his age right now. I'm so excited about Victor Vodnik. I was also surprised at the Mississippi assignment. I was more surprised even that he's went from the Rome bullpen to the Mississippi rotation, but I'm not upset about it.
No, and I think there's going to be a lot of good things to look forward for him. I look forward to his next start, see if they try to, I mean, just keep my build up. Let's see if we what he can do with, let's say, a 75 pitch count, if he gets up to that point, so we can see. It's almost kind of a Waskar Nuñoa situation. I mean, Waskar, it seemed like in spring training, he was kind of fading out after about 50 pitches. You see, he's doing fairly well in the major leagues right now. So I think we can see similar progress out of Victor Vodnik once he kind of gets his pitch count built up.
Is he? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one guy also I want to touch base on with in Mississippi, and it's a guy that's kind of, I feel like he's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit. He really struggled in 2019. That's Grayson Genesta. He looks really good right now. I've watched him at the plate. He looks like he's seeing the ball really well right now. His swing looks really smooth, and he's not trying to jerk the ball quite as much as he seemed like he was doing a lot of in 2019. I think he's already got a couple home runs over the first week and a half. I had essentially no expectations for Grayson Genesta coming into the season. Not that I was writing him off or anything. It's just that I didn't know what to make of him, and obviously we haven't seen him in a while. But I have to say I'm pretty happy with what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I am too. And we kind of talked about this during our last couple of episodes where Grayson Genesta and CJ Alexander were guys we had our eye on this season. It's like, hey, these guys are kind of up against it that they didn't come to the alternate training site last season. They lost a year of development. They're older guys. So it's kind of a put up or shut up time for both of these guys. And it looks like, at least so far, Grayson Genesta is up for the challenge.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to Rome. This is going to be a fun lineup, Matt. Not just the marquee guys. Of course, everybody knows about Michael Harris and Bryce Ball. And we'll talk about Bryce Ball in a second. But there's so many guys up and down this lineup, just kind of scrappy hitters. And, you know, the scrappiest guy of all is probably second baseman Cody Milligan. Hitting over 400 so far on the young season. Obviously, probably not sustainable, but it sure is a lot of fun right now. He just kind of sprays the ball around. He reminds me a little bit of Riley Delgado in that standpoint, except he also has speed, which Delgado doesn't have.
Yeah, and it's a good thing to get some more second base depth in the organization, especially after they made that trade for Tommy Malone last season and lost A.J. Graffinito in that trade, that they needed to get some development in the lower minors. And Cody Milligan certainly seems to be up for the challenge right now. But like you said, it's just kind of that scrappy second baseman type, and that's going to keep playing like that. It's going to take him a long way in this organization.
So going back to Ball, were you surprised that he got the high A assignment rather than double A?
Yeah, I'm not super surprised, but I'm mildly surprised. I mean, I thought there was a good chance he was going to get it, but based off of what we've seen from Grayson Genesta and even Drew Lugbauer right now, it looks like it's a good assignment for both those guys and Ball. It gives him time to develop down here, but I mean, he's doing okay so far at Rome, and you know, he's striking out a lot, but he's also walking a lot, and getting on base. I mean, coming into tonight, he had a .240 batting average, but he has a .444 OBP. So. It's rare, kind of rare to see your on-base percentage 200 points more than the batting average. But, I mean, whatever you can do to get on base. But his defensive, it's ugly. But it's a good thing that Universal DH is going to be coming to major leagues here in the near future.
Yeah, the defense, it's funny because the thing that we heard about at the alternate training site last year is that they were really trying to drill first base defense with Ball. And Ooh, boy, it's not been pretty so far. But that's the thing we've noticed about Ball, of course, is that he has a really good idea of what he's doing at the plate, and he's not afraid to take his walks. Obviously, a 440 OBP is not going to keep going, but his batting average, his OBP will start growing closer to each other as the year progresses. But it's not surprising at all that he's walking a lot. And at the high A level, I can imagine most pitchers don't want anything to do with him anyway.
No, I think the real test when he moves up to Double A and starts seeing some more accomplished in pitching there, I think that's when you're going to see the walk rate fall, and he's going to see what the bat's really made of at that point.
And then we got Logan Brown. Now, Logan Brown is a prospect that I've had a hard time with. I like what I see behind the plate. Very solid defensively. I like what I see at the plate. Just kind of a good all-around hitter. It looks like he's added some power to his game. He had a grand slam the first week, and I think he hit another home run last night. But honestly, I've gotten really excited about fundamentally sound catchers that can hit a little bit before. And I'm thinking about, Cade Sevig. I'm thinking about Lucas Herbert. And they end up, not really progressing. Jonathan Morales to some degree. But Logan Brown's starting to make me a believer. Matt, can you talk me down?
I don't think so. He spent a lot of time around some of these major league players, whether it's spring training or the alternate site. I mean, he's getting a lot of exposures with a lot of these other guys, and I think it's really starting to kind of help him out. And I think you're going to see him progress this season, because I think what's going to happen is Shea Langeliers eventually, let's say midseason or thereabouts, he'll get promoted up to Gwinnett. Logan Brown will probably piggyback him to Mississippi, and he's just going to keep on going. I mean, I think his ceiling's a major league backup, but why can't he do that?
I don't.
Why not?
Yeah, let's stop saying why not people do things and talk about the why they can. Sometimes I was talking about this specifically in regards to Drew Waters the other day. Sometimes we focus so much on what they can't do right now that we lose sight of what they can do. Right now, Logan Brown can do pretty much what he wants, at least at the high A level. So kudos to him. And I thought he would start at Double A, but I thought he would be the backup to Langeliers. It's clear that they wanted him in high A, basically so he can play nearly every day. And that's really paying off for him right now.
Even if he can barely hit, he would probably have at least some kind of a future as a possible major league backup. But if he can hit like this, he's got a future.
And the marquee names for the pitching staff, as we expected, Jared Schuster and Bryce Elder from the 2020 draft, they are going to start in high A. They've both have kind of stumbled out of the gate a little bit. Not surprising. This is their pro debut. I would be more shocked if they just were blowing out doors at the high A level in their first attempt. So nothing I saw out of both of them gave me any reason really to worry. Both have the possibility for being strong, middle of the rotation kind of guys in the future.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. It's just it's their first exposure to pro ball. They're doing it at the high A level. It's just going to be a development period for both of them. I mean, they're not over their heads, I don't think. It's just a matter of let's get acclimated. I mean, Schuster's only had one start, and there's got to be some butterflies and things involved like that. I mean, first pro start, and Elder's only had his second start. So, it's just going to be, let's keep an eye on them for a while. They're not going to be expected to move quickly by any means. I mean, they could very well spend the entire season at high A. I would expect they may see Double A at some point this season, but, I mean, it's they're in no hurry whatsoever. Let's just throw them out there every fifth or sixth day and let it ride.
Anybody at Rome surprise you in a good way?
Yeah, Ricky DeVito's been very impressive so far. I mean, he came from the 2019 draft, and of course, guy we've had our eye on for a while who hasn't accomplished a whole lot up to this point, but Trey Riley has done pretty well so far in his couple of appearances.
Yeah, I got a chance to see him the other day. just remarkable turnaround. He's obviously put the shutdown to good use, pitching in control, kind of within himself. Way too many times I saw him in 2019 just, you know, start off really well, like one or two batters, and then just completely lose all feel for the strike zone and where he wants to put the ball. And I haven't seen any of that yet. It's been a remarkable turnaround and very exciting. And you mentioned DeVito too. Yeah, his stuff looks like it's taken an uptick as well, especially the changeup. Looks like it could be a potential weapon for him. Tanner Gordon is a guy that hardly anybody's talked about. He's done pretty well. I saw him pitch in relief in Danville back in 2019. I know the Braves had kind of tabbed him as a starter, but they only used him in relief for Danville. He started in the rotation, and he's throwing the ball very well, mid-90s fastball. Just a lot of good unheralded guys right now at the Rome and also the Augusta level, which we'll talk about in just a second. So I think Rome is going to be one of the more interesting teams in the affiliate constellation this year.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes up and down the line. You got Indigo Diaz, you got AJ Puckett, Casey Kalish. I mean, there's a lot of guys down there that's contributing so far, and I could see several of them move up Mississippi before too long.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap up by talking about the Green Jackets a little bit. They're like the Gwinnett's little cousin in that they only really have one major offensive prospect down there, and that's Vaughn Grissom. He's played a little bit of shortstop, but is mostly playing third base, and I think that's obviously where they probably see him going forward, though I'm sure they'll keep throwing him out at short every once in a while. But He's off to a little bit of a slow start. I did a prospect profile for him on the last Sunday Farm Report, so check it out. Kind of looking at his swing a little bit. It's going to be fun watching him develop, but definitely a lot of room for development on that. The basics are there. The way he attacks the ball, he's going to have to improve that before he can move up.
Yeah, I was just not super surprised he ended up at Augusta. I mean, I thought with the time he could put in the alternate trading site last season, there was a shot he could end up at Rome. But like I said, I mean, if he's having to learn a brand new position from scratch at third base, he's going to spend a lot of time at Augusta this season. But I mean, like I said, I mean, it's a development process for him, and it's going to be fun to see it happen. He's treading water so far, but I mean, he's got plenty of time to develop. There's no hurry on him. He can take as long as he needs because they've got those positions occupied ahead of him in the organization. So just let him take his time.
And anybody surprise you that was assigned to Augusta?
No, that was only mild surprise. I think, and even in some of these cases, some like Cam Shepard, I wouldn't have been surprised based off his college experience to go up to Rome, but it's not surprising to see him, man. The Augusta one.
Yeah, I figured Bo Phillip was going to start at shortstop one place or the other, and Cam Shepard would start at the other, and I wasn't sure which way it was. I've kind of flip-flopped them in my mind a couple times, but it was Phillip at high A and Shepard at low A, and at least offensively, that looks to be the correct decision, as Shepard has kind of struggled in his first taste of pro debut.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see Bo Phillip take that double bump up to Rome, but I mean, especially after his mediocre performance at Danville when he first came, right after he got drafted, and he wasn't even at the alternate training site, so it was a little surprising to see him, but obviously he impressed during spring training enough to get that bump up.
Yeah, well, his swing looks a lot better than I saw in Danville, I'll tell you that. It's like day and night better. So,
but there's some impressive pitching down there, too.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the guy that there was footage put out on social media by our friend Garrett Spain from Road to Atlanta podcast and Talking Chop. He got some footage from the Augusta broadcast for Rodery Munoz, who previously had only pitched in the Dominican Republic. So nobody had seen this guy really at all. So I had heard good arm strength guy with maybe some secondaries, that definitely a rotation candidate. And he just came up and threw 99 miles per hour consistently throughout his first start.
Yeah, I saw where like the first roughly 15 pitchers or so, he was throwing nothing but fastballs, all between, I think, 97 and 99. I mean, it's ridiculous. That kind of fastball with movement, it's not fair to these low-A hitters. And he's flashing a mid-80s slider and a changeup in the low 90s. It's impressive. I mean, it's not as if he came completely out of nowhere, because I was looking back over the 2019 organizational awards. He was the 2019 pitcher of the year in the DSL. Obviously, and especially as secretive as this organization was, there's no footage coming from the DSL, so we're just having to take him at their word that he was a really good pitcher. So, but I mean, he took that jump up to Danville, and he's done very well with his first start. I imagine he'll get his second start on Saturday, but we'll see how the next few starts go to see how if he progresses. But I wouldn't be 100% shocked to see him go up to Rome in the not too distant future. But I think he'll get a few more starts at least before getting that move up.
Yeah, and it wasn't just 99. It was 99 with explosiveness. I mean, it was moving out of his hand, and I forget who they were playing, but boy, those hitters, they none of them looked comfortable. It was great.
Yeah, he's going to be a fun one to watch, and he's going to be starting to show up on prospect list before too long. He's not on any list right now, but get the midseason list out. I think you're going to see a new name on there.
And then there's some other guys too. Tyler Owens is a guy we've been talking about a little bit. Came in, showed again a lot of velocity. A little control problems, but nothing insurmountable by any stretch. Just really a live arm. And I think that's the recurring theme here. I don't know, every night in, night out, they're not going to have pinpoint control, but the number of just raw, strong arms that Augusta can throw out at you is really impressive.
Yeah, and I've watched some footage. I think he had a start last night. Darius Vines has been very impressive so far as well.
Yeah, when I'd seen him before, by far his curveball was kind of the best pitch. His fastball was just kind of meh. He's really, really a different pitcher now. I mean, the fastball he can pinpoint, and he throws it consistently in the low to mid-90s, and the changeup has become a real weapon here. And David Lee, another prospect guy we interact with quite a bit on the Twitters, remarked the other day that about the changeup. And I realized that so many of these guys that we've been watching, changeups kind of across the organization, seem like that must have been a focus of development, because a lot of changeups are being thrown, A, more often, and B, thrown with a lot more conviction and getting good results from it from a whole lot of different pitchers.
Yeah, because we've seen the last few years, it's been a lot of fastball slider type pitchers, but when they start making that changeup, like we talked about Rodery Munoz a little while ago, I mean, if he can throw that changeup in the low 90s to go along with that ridiculous fastball, and if he can have an expected slider in the mid 80s, yeah, those kind of pitchers are going to go a long way in this organization.
It's exciting. Matt, you know what I'm excited about?
What are you excited about?
Sunday, I'm actually going to a baseball game.
Oh, I'm hoping to get the one next week myself.
Yeah, going to see the Stripers on Sunday. And then if the weather's good, hopefully Tuesday, see the Rome Braves in their home opener, and hopefully then Saturday, Rome Braves. So if anybody's going to be out Gwinnett Sunday or Rome Braves Tuesday or Saturday, give me a buzz on social media, and I'd be happy to meet up with you and talk some baseball with you.
And what I'm going to try to time it for next week is to go out to Mississippi when they come back home next week and try to time for Victor Vaudek's next start.
All right. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up then. Matt, you got anything else?
No. I'm just giddy to be talking about minor league baseball again.
Yes. All right. Programming note, we're going to actually try to get back to a regular recording schedule. We're recording this on a Friday, basically, because that's just what life handed us this week. A lot of school stuff for me. I got a kid graduating, and so that's been taking up a lot of time. But as we progress through the summer, we're going to try recording every Monday evening. That's when all the minor leaguers are going to have the day off. So we'll try to record on that and have a new OFR Farm Report podcast available to you Tuesday morning. Don't hold us to it, though. Life happens.
Yeah, but it's just going to be a strange minor league season, seeing that no games played every Monday night across the board.
Yeah. All right. Everybody, have a good week, and talk to you later.
Have a good one. No. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien.